Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of I Do, I Did, I Don't. I'm Lori Wood, here with my co-host and partner in crime, Steve Fatula.
Morning, everyone.
And it is a Wednesday. We're halfway through the week. We were talking off mic and kind of throwing around some topics, but we thought we would just kind of wing it today. It's been kind of a crazy week, a crazy month, crazy year. We've done a lot of events. McCoy Fatula is great, giving back to the community in several different ways. We just had the Empty Bowls event that we went to for the Sacramento Food Bank.
River City Food Bank. Yeah, if I didn't correct that, I'd get...
No, you should, and I should know better, because it is your wife's organization, and the event was amazing, and from what I understand, was quite a successful event.
Yeah, they did great.
And, you know, it's always wonderful to see organizations like that get aid and get help and donations.
Yeah, I think especially right now where people financially are so stuck, those food banks have produced so many chances for people to kind of get hope again.
The prices of things are outrageous. Yeah. And they say it's only going to get worse. And it's very difficult, single moms, single dads, when you have a one income household, when you go through a divorce or a separation and, you know, somebody's not contributing to support the household anymore. I don't know how people are getting by. It's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. We had a client that we were trying to encourage to go to the food bank because this is a situation where the parents are paying for their kids. And both him and his I guess, ex-spouse at this point. And neither of them can afford anything.
Are they younger? And, you know, it's a wonderful resource, but people have to be able to put their pride and ego aside and admit they need help. And I don't know if it's ego, but I'm a one that finds difficult to ask for help.
Sure.
I think I should figure out everything myself.
I get it.
But it's such a wonderful resource. And sometimes it's no fault of your own. It's just California is incredibly expensive. We have a client right now who's living in what was the family residence, but it was his soon-to-be ex-wife's separate property. Mm. And she has moved out. And of course, she wants it sold and elderly and on a fixed income and is having a very, very difficult time finding affordable, safe housing. It's just, it's a rough time.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true. And that's kind of why we're out there supporting where we can, because obviously, you know, we are all doing okay. And we want to make sure everybody else can do okay as we can find them support. Yeah, as best you can. So yeah. We did that event. You guys were at an event for Philanthropy Summit, and then there were some more fun events. And
the Philanthropy Summit was quite inspiring.
Good.
I met a lot of very interesting, inspiring people.
Nice.
To listen to the introductions of the people who received an award and all the wonderful work that they do certainly made me feel like I want to do more. So it was quite incredible. Sometimes it's a timing issue. Where can you fit in more stuff? But it was an amazing event from what I saw.
Well, that's
great. The food was exceptional. So, of course, at my table, there was vanilla cake and chocolate cake and some kind of lemon cake. And it was funny to watch people sit down, see what cake was in front of them, go, nope, I want the chocolate cake. I'm going to go sit over there. I'm like, we could have just switched the plates. But there was table jockeying for a specific kind of cake.
For the cake.
Cute. Yeah.
Well, we've seen those cakes turn into fights. So.
Hey, cake is fantastic. You know, I've never met a cake I didn't like.
The cake, the sweets, the food. I mean, it's just, they're fun events. And when the office gets to go and see, like, you know, the positive impact you can make, it does help for, you know, the divorce world all the time is pretty drab, to say the least.
So, and it's extremely nice emotional. And not only the divorce world, but the estate planning piece. We get people who are going through the most difficult times of their lives and don't always keep their emotions tucked away or aren't always able to. So sometimes we get a lot of backlash, a lot of shrapnel hits us.
Yes.
So if you can fill time with something positive while giving back, sharing blessings. That's pretty amazing.
That's those are the good exhaustions.
Yeah.
And as we were talking, we're getting ready to hit that final quarter of the year, which is chocked full of more events and holiday things and stress on top of stress on top of stress, which I think is why today's topic was kind of like we're exhausted.
Yeah, we're lucky to be even functioning and speaking.
Yeah, it's important to just touch base on, I guess, things you can do to kind of keep yourself calm during the next 100 days, because it's about to start running.
And we thought life was busy already, and I just took on a 14-week commitment to help out at divorce care.
Yes, yes.
And so that's 3+ hours every Wednesday, plus check-ins during the week with clients, which, again, if we can help, I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's a great program.
What is it?
So divorce care is a class that is put on by Bayside Church in Granite Bay off Sierra College. And anybody, you don't have to be a member of the church to attend this class. I think the fee is nominal. I want to say it's $30 to $40 for the entirety of it.
And you get a workbook and
you get a workbook, things,
right? Yeah.
You get access to videos that talk on topics of each stage of the process, whether you are thinking about divorced, you are getting divorced, separated, you've been divorced and are still struggling. It's a support group for people going through that with educational material on how to get through it and past it. And then, of course, referrals to things like Second Saturday, which we offer, which is legal information for people the second and third Saturday of the month. Mediation that we offer, that the service I provide here for people who don't want to go to court but can't quite reach an agreement on their own, maybe because it's too emotional, their communication is not productive, but we help them bridge that gap. So it's a wonderful resource. And the topics, you know, dealing with your spouse, co-parenting, anger, when you wish them harm, I mean, the sadness of it, it's all very well thought out.
And this is one that when we were doing Second Saturday early on, everyone always said it was competition. It's not competition. It's very different, and they're both very important.
Absolutely. They are a big proponent and believer of what Second Saturday is here. It's not competition. I was a speaker last, session is what I'll call it, and I was just honored to do so. And it's just a resource for people.
That's it.
And there's no – I always like to think of collaboration over competition. When I had talked to a few experts in this field, I think one was a realtor. She's like, how the heck did you get in there? It's an exclusive club. I've been trying for 8 years and they won't let me in. And I couldn't speak to that because I sent an email saying, how can I be of help? I was a speaker last semester and then or session, and now they've asked me to be a part of it. But I don't know if that person was trying to market their business or what the intention was.
I think a lot of people look at these as opportunities to sell their business. And the reality is you're doing it because it's a service you're providing and you're giving back. And inevitably people will hire you because they've met you. But I would guess that person tried to oversell and tried to take everybody as a client. And the reality is that's not how it works. You're not doing it for that. You're there to help.
Yes.
And if they want to hire you because you've helped, that's kind of the positive that flows.
That comes back from it. Yes.
But that's your mindset, it's the wrong mindset. And it's not why we do it either.
It's got to be. Last week was the first week, but people can attend on week 4 for the first time. They can go through it as many times as they want. Sometimes when you're just fresh into a separation or divorce, you don't always hear everything clearly.
You're operating
at a very high emotional state. And I've had clients that I've referred to this program before I even became part of it that have gone through it 2 or 3 times and found it very, very helpful. There's no judgment. It's a great group of people. You can show up and observe and not even speak the first time or second time if you want to. But I really enjoy giving my time to give back. And I have had people approach me, and if in my professional life, we can do something that benefits them, I'm happy to do that. But that's not the goal of why I'm there.
No, I think people have to I think there's value in volunteering.
Yes.
I think there's lots of value in, I mean, maybe it's selfish as you finally feel good about something. Like we deal with divorce all the time and estate planning as well, but divorce tends to be where the emotions hit harder right. a lot. And you know, it's, I say this to anyone getting into family law, it's a thankless job. You aren't, and this isn't an ego thing, but you're helping people at the worst times.
Right.
They're not understanding the value you're really bringing. They tend to hyper-focus on the obvious things, right? Custody or abuse, stuff like that. You can say what's good or not good. But a lot of it is you're really kind of holding people together while they're trying to make awful decisions. And then at some point you're charging them. And then at some point they get mad. Like inevitably, like it's, I think.
Yeah. There's no winner in a divorce case.
That's the reality.
If it was, you know, a different type of case, a personal injury and you were harmed or wronged and you got some compensation for it, that's easier to quantify than, you know, a divorce case that nobody wins in a divorce. You just do the best you can to get the best outcome you can and keep your client together
in the interim. And to move on. And it's such a hard thing. So when the opportunity to volunteer like is there and that kind of can lighten you, that's.
Yes. There is no selfless deed. None.
Yeah.
And I've really thought about this on, there's got to be something that's selfless. And I was telling one of the co-founders or directors, whatever his title is at Divorce Care. He says, I really want to thank you for being here. We have the utmost confidence in you. You know, you've done your homework more than anybody else, which, you know, that's kind of who I am.
That is Lori.
But I was telling him that I was grateful to be there. I should be saying thank you, because just to even make somebody who's going through a really difficult time smile or feel comforted in any way, or share knowledge, or make them feel less alone, or give them a safe place to step out of their lives and go have a piece of pizza and a salad. And yes, there's junk food there everywhere I go. But it's just, it's a super nice feeling. That means you can come in the next day and get yelled at by somebody having an emotional state and not take it as bad as you know, it's rough.
It's rough. I don't know. That's when we're looking to hire people, that's one of the things we have to talk about. It's like, what happens when you get yelled at? And they look at me like, are you yelling at me? I'm like,
No,
it ain't me. It's the client that's mad that you didn't call them back. Well, what was the situation? Well, they called at midnight and it's 8 a.m. and you haven't been in the office yet. You don't have the voicemail, but you're about to get yelled at. And they're like, well, why would that happen? Because they didn't sleep, because they're focused on that thing, because that's all they can do in this moment. And you're
the only place they can vent.
And you've got to complain to your colleagues, take a deep breath, and then figure out, all right, let's talk about why you're acting crazy today and tone you back down so we can move this thing forward. And that's a tough, it is exhausting.
While we're touching on this, let me ask you this, because family law is an acquired taste. You either love it and you're in it, or you're like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
You got out of law school. We talked about kind of how you were threatened into going to law school.
Yeah.
What made you land on family law?
So nothing but needing a job was the reality, right? So all through law school, everything I was doing was environmental based. It was what my undergrad was for. It's what I enjoyed was this idea of saving the environment, or everybody's ideals of saving the environment. And then you also realize environmental law doesn't do that. And that the reality is that's just kind of offsetting costs. All of it is just about offsetting costs. And when we moved here, we needed a job. And the first job I could get was at a general practitioner that did anything that had the word law next to it. He would practice.
Oh, that's scary.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah, because you're not good or great at one specific thing.
Yeah, you can, whatever the phrasing is, you're master of none or something like that. Yeah,
jack of all trades, master of none.
Correct, yeah. Yes. And that was very much the case. But we had found that when we would get assigned the family law cases, we were able to work with people really well and resolve things. And there was a balancing act of giving people advice while kind of advising them outside of law, that kind of was enjoyable. And it still is. It's just, you know, it is exhausting. But then each kid I had kind of forced me down that path further, where it's like, that's kind of, you know, you grow as a person and as a parent, and then you don't want to see people taken advantage of, and you want to help those that need to be. I think we always have the best clients. I think rarely do I think we have the bad client out of the two, right? The bad spouse or the bad parent. I think that we pick our clients and we require them to behave a certain way. And it's because that's important to me and it's important to the court, because we can represent anybody, but we don't represent anybody.
No, and you've earned the right to be choosy. And I like what you said. You know, divorce isn't just about custody and dividing property. It's a purely emotional thing. Yeah. And it's one of the only times in life that you're told, I know this is, you know, 100% emotional, but you got to set that aside and make some logical business decisions. But that's one of the reasons that we offer coaching, correct, both executive and divorce, because we understand it's emotional. The place for it is not in the courtroom or while you're making decisions on the division of the property, but we're here to help after the process or during the process to give you a place to kind of manage those so it doesn't affect your outcome.
I think that there's emotion obviously exists, right? Sure. Like it's not good to push it all the way down. But you have to be able to use it and use it correctly, not be kind of, imprisoned by it. And you have the value of knowing the law and what it is. And it's not therapy with the coaching, because generally therapists don't really understand law.
No.
And they don't understand courtrooms, and they want things to make sense in their bubble. And it's really hard when people's bubbles burst because the law doesn't work that way and the courts don't work that way. And the things that justice isn't a thing in family court. It's not real. No,
in the world in court, it's not fair.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go the way we think it should or expect it to.
We were in front of a judge a few weeks back, and this is an interesting one. They were asking to increase support and we were asking to not increase support. That was it.
So we represent the payor.
We represented the payor in that scenario. And the conversation was an odd one with the judge, who was a temporary judge. And he's just like, Jesus Christ, like, you don't know what's going to happen, mm-hmm, because family law burns judges out. So you don't ever know if your judge is going to be the same judge. You know, they're probably going to be there for about a year. So you'll probably be in front of them two or three times. But the reality is then it changes.
And where they come from, do they know what they're doing?
Right. Yeah. So, and some come from family law and they have they tend to know more. And some come from every other type of law background, and family law is a completely different thing. And you're like, Jesus, okay, we got to speed everybody up. But in this case, he took everything under submission. And we're like, all right, which is odd, not normal hearing.
Right.
And he ended up terminating support because he found that there was a conviction of spousal abuse years before they separated. And I'm looking at her going, when the hell that happened? She's like, oh, I forgot about that. I didn't think that was permanent. Something like that. And I just couldn't. How? So these are things that you could have brought up, but like people, first of all, it's not my life. I don't know you. I don't know the situation.
You're
only
as good as what your client tells you.
Every case you've ever been a part of, or him, because it was a criminal matter, because she wasn't a part of it. And then I looked at her and she didn't understand the significance of any of that, despite the conversation we had had. But the court ultimately zeroed out support and said no support because he's an old person.
So she was paying him
for about 4 months.
Okay, so not nothing, 4 years.
No, nothing
and
crazy.
And she did not have to pay him anymore, which all you were expecting was a decrease.
I was expecting just a not
due
increase.
Diligence.
Yeah, I just wanted really a done. Not an increase. And it was almost like, I don't even know if they were actually, now I'm saying this, I don't think they were even asking for an increase. I think they were asking for a day of the week to pay by. And I didn't want that. One, because our client wasn't paying on time by any means, because there was no date. So it was by the last day of the month by default. So she would pay by the last day of the month. And the judge took it on his own. And, well, you brought up support. I'm canceling it. And the reality is that's the stuff that could happen in court. The judge can go, I'm going to make my own decisions. And the reality is people are like, well, that's not fair. And the answer is, I'm sure he said that's not fair. And his attorney probably said, do you want to appeal it? And then he said, well, what's that going to cost? It's like $150,000 and not. And it completely changed everything in the case, because now her biggest thing was, I can't pay support. We were arguing on merits on dollars because we didn't know about this other magic thing right here. And the judge found like the greatest facts. And you're just like, oh,
sometimes okay. It works out, but as a mediator,
sometimes it works out, but don't expect it to expect it to be the opposite always.
And one of the things that I say with mediation is you guys may not be able to reach an agreement on your own. But mediation, we can bridge the gap.
Bridge the crap.
And find something that is acceptable to you both. Nobody's going to walk away dancing in the street.
Yeah.
But at least you remain in control. You step in that courtroom. There are several factors that this is all out of your control, just like what happened. Now, you said something, and I just want to clarify. The domestic violence allegation that opposing party had was not against your client?
It was criminal. So it was, but it was the state versus him. So, like, if I'm asking her for her files and I'm searching her, it doesn't show up
because
she's not part of it.
Perhaps it was a former relationship and they were saying.
No, because that wouldn't have impacted the court here.
That's what I.
But it was. And then I reached out to the DA and I was like, can somebody help me understand what this is? Because my client doesn't understand if she's actually protected because they. It becomes a mess very quickly, but it's something the courts see things differently and they have access to things on the back end differently than we have access. And he didn't care and was like, nope, no support. And this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And the answer was like, awesome decision because it benefits us. But
but it won't
it was a what's going to happen today scenario, that wasn't one thing I was expecting to happen.
No.
And you just never know all the facts. I remember our first like case. We represented the wife and everything was straightforward. Right. He was an awful person. He owed money, all this stuff. And we get to court. And the first thing the opposing counsel does is say, hey, you want to chat? And ask the question or something along the lines of, you are aware my client's not here. And we were like, okay. And he's like, yeah, he's in the hospital in another country. Okay. Because your wife's family tried to kill him and he has to get a bullet out of his hip. And you're just like, so our client's family, but not our client. So that's
this was
better.
One of your first cases.
One of the first ones. Yeah.
And well, it was welcome to family law.
And it's the reality, especially as the international, there's more and more international aspects to these cases. Right. And it's, you can't control all the facts. Like that's the part where people don't necessarily always understand. Civil, in theory, all the facts are done. Criminal, in theory, all the facts are done.
Right.
Family, the case is evolving every day. It's every exchange, every time the kid calls, every single second of the day.
Every communication.
Something can completely change.
Yes.
And change the whole case and change everybody's lives and all this stuff. And that's kind of where you get kind of almost addicted to the drama because you're in it. And it's, you're like, okay, this fire happened. How do we put the fire out, best protect everybody and utilize it without overusing it? Because you do get a warped sense of strategy in your brain. Like, you know, if somebody gets hurt, you immediately go, okay, but then we can utilize this and file a motion. Which is really screwy. I mean,
but it's the way your brain's been trained to think.
And it's the way the world works. Like, it's just, you know, if someone makes a mistake parenting and you're in front of the court, that mistake's a much bigger deal. And you go back probably 15 years where it was not like this. And half those things, nobody would have cared about.
To get a domestic violence granted is just.
It's like, I mean, we had a case that he hit the kid with a belt. Right. Which growing up, I mean, like really growing up, that was not that big of a deal.
I thought it was
about
growing up.
And I deserved the ones I got. I understand that. And then she, mom, agreed at the time. But now we're in the divorce world.
Now.
So then that came up.
That's abuse.
And now it's abuse. And now we're dealing with him not having his kid for 3 to 4 months while we try to go track down where the other information where she supported this was. And then she gets a DUI. And you're like, and this is where you're like, Jesus Christ. Like, and then inevitably you're talking to the other attorney going like these two people, like this is, that's the stuff.
The only ones that are suffering are the kids.
Yeah. A lot of it is just like, how do you help people overall? Because it's, that's the tough balance too, is can you help people overall? And the answer to some of it is, you know, that's not really your job. But if you can do it at the same time, great. But
and if you can keep them from hurting themselves,
yeah,
and not in a physical way, but hurting their case or, you know, of course, everything that they agreed on during the marriage, the co-parenting decisions they made, the financial decisions they made, mm-hmm. one person's going to use that against the other person.
Yep.
You know, and judges are people. They have bad days. And there are just so many things that are forever changing.
Yeah.
And there are no guarantees. And, you know, justice is dumb, blind, and cruel sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen so much where the judge will change based on what someone's wearing, based on how someone's slouched, based on a disrespect, based on a hat being worn. And people don't understand little things are what push them. Right? They're looking for any reason to make decisions, and that can do it.
Absolutely. I've always told clients, if you have to go to court, you need to dress appropriately. You cannot use obscenities. I had this one client who I was coaching and had representation, and he was going to trial, and he was just didn't want the divorce and just angry. I can only do so much. I can't tape your mouth shut.
Yeah.
But he knew dress appropriately. He was a blue collar worker. So that wasn't, he didn't put on a suit every day, but we talked about that and just keep your composure. Let your attorney be your spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Let him be your advocate. The first time the wife said something, he just started screaming obscenities. And every time after that he was in court, whether she was completely wrong and he was completely right, he lost every time.
Yeah, because they remember.
Because he ticked the judge off. Yeah. He showed disrespect in the courtroom, and the judge could care less what he wanted. He wasn't going to give it to him. And that's, unfortunately, the reality of the world.
Yeah, people hold grudges even though they're not supposed to. Mm-hmm. And judges are supposed to recuse themselves if they feel certain ways, but people are always supposed to do. And that's not always what happens.
No.
And then some judges get thrown into the case the day of, and they have no idea what's going on. And they say,
and no, I didn't time read to anything, read the background.
So what do you want to do today? And we've had cases where people are like, we want to go forward. And I'm just like, judge, if you haven't read it, this makes no sense. And like, well, they want to go forward. I went, all right. And then the judge goes, no, dismisses it. And they go, well, you didn't read anything. He goes, yeah, I told you in the beginning. You told me you want to go forward. Bad decision. And you just look and go, gosh, you're so dumb. But then we win and we walked away. But
was that, I know that you spent the last week or at least the last few days preparing for a big trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that trial got moved. Was that because of the judge or something related? I
mean, the one that we have coming up that's inevitably going to get moved again has been ongoing for 3 years. And the first part of the trial took place, I think, I feel like it started last October. I feel like it was something like that. And then the next day was, and I could be wrong about it. Maybe it was the first day and didn't start. And then the next day was like February. And then we were set to go again next week. And the judge is completely moving locations. She's not here anymore. So we have an entire trial that's based on 3 years ago report, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, something like that report. So the report's already questionable. Now we don't even have our judge anymore. Like
this thing's being hurt in pieces.
And it's being hurt. And there's just,
that's not good.
There's no way you're getting fair. And it's not against him or against her or any. The reality is it's not a plan. It just, it might be a plan of the earth because you're not allowed to have a trial. And that's, I don't know how you don't read that one real big.
Right, I don't know how that's not a big red flag smacking you in the face going.
Yeah,
so try and settle this.
Might have to start the whole thing over with a new judge,
which could take years to get in front.
Which could easily take a period of time. And the reports about a kid in kindergarten. We're talking about a third grader. We're talking about the absences a child had 3 years ago impacting a today
that are irrelevant.
That's all. Yeah. And then we're going to start all over. Like, it's just the negative is I ripped apart the expert. So she would be ready for it this time.
So that she has all this time to prepare.
The expert's been done. So we finished the expert. That's the only thing we've ever finished. But then it wouldn't be the same judge. And the expert didn't know shit then. So we're not going to know it now. It's just.
What is the likelihood that these two will entertain potential settlement?
So right now, higher, because if it gets reset again, they've spent $80,000 plus on these cases, right? Like over the 3 years, because it's not all with us. It's moved attorneys. But it started with her claiming domestic violence and him losing his kid for 4 months. And that has been driving the hate for this whole process.
Is this the belt?
No.
No, this is another.
I don't even remember what the DV was. It wasn't, I mean, she lost the claim. So it wasn't even obviously didn't get granted. And California grants a lot. So it didn't even reach that level.
I had an attorney once tell me with the new laws, and this was a little while ago, that you can't even burp in the direction of your spouse without saying, excuse me, or you can get a DV.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that being pled. I mean, some of the judges are at least getting more vocal about, like, this is kind of crap, but they're required to follow the rules, and the rules give almost too much. I've seen one
granted because a wife was upset because the husband promised to take her skydiving and at the last minute decided he didn't want to do that, and it was granted for emotional distress.
I was going to say, if it was an intentional thing, but this is where people get themselves screwed because they say the wrong things to the court. And that's like we were sitting behind, and I'll finish this story, then we can jump off because apparently I have a class I'm supposed to teach now.
Well, and I have a client, but you know.
Wait a second. And it was it started with a conversation about a sex contract because they were in a non-relationship, just physical. And I'm like, all right, let's keep going down this path. And then she had filed because he wouldn't make it a relationship. Like this is where we're at.
So they had a written contract on the expectations of their sexual relationship.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And she
wanted more.
She quote unquote caught feelings and he stopped the contract. And then at some point he had sent text messages that were, she was started telling everyone they were going out or they broke up. And he's like, we never dated. For like the nitpicking on what you're getting mad about was this word dating. That's what really set them apart. So then they added the exchanges, and during the exchanges, he's like, you're going to pay for this at some point. He tried to explain it as he meant like karma as a whole. Judge didn't buy it.
Right.
But the case started with, sir, we're here on trial. You've not filed a response. Would you like a continuance so that you can file a response? And all he had was his iPad. And he's like, well, judge, the response has all of my refuting documents in it. And the judge went, okay, well, would you like to continue? Because then I can review things or we can go forward today. And he goes, nah, you know what? Let's just go get it done today. And I've seen that destroy so many people because then he had no evidence, nothing. And all he had was what he was saying. And then he's trying to show things on his iPad. And of course, nothing works because those buildings, those departments are so bad with Wi-Fi and things working that it's like, that's not how it moves. And then he couldn't explain the messages well enough because now he's flustered because the Wi-Fi didn't work. Like, it's you could see from the beginning he's going to lose.
And the judge was trying to get
the judge was trying to go, look, if you have things, I want this to be based on the merits, not on how you guys present. And he had a collection of guns. Collection of rifles, they would go shooting together. So guns meant a lot.
Yeah.
So she did what she did because she was mad. Very clear. It would have been easy to prove that. He should have filed his own to balance it out. But instead he went, no, I want to be done today. And the impatience cost him a 3-year restraining order.
And no counsel.
And his gut, no counsel.
Yeah.
And they're not, I mean, attorneys are expensive. I get it. And they're not all good. And that's fair. But I have seen so many people shoot themselves in the foot or not appreciate how little you need to do to get abuse anymore and how much effort it requires to actually get around those things. But
it's just like anything else. And I agree that attorneys are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And there are attorneys that are not good as if any profession.
Yeah.
But what is that saying that he who represents himself has a fool for a client? And just like anything else, you wouldn't go and try and buy a house without a realtor unless you had some experience. It's very beneficial to have somebody help you navigate through things, whether it's on a consulting basis, whether they're your advocate in court, whether they're trying to negotiate a settlement for you, whether they're mediating and keeping the emotions out of it. There are things that you can do before you get cocky and make the outcome worse, or just make the outcome worse because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we had someone not show up the other day to DV trial. Didn't show up. They lost. Shocking. Yeah,
that's a big shock.
Right? 3-year restraining
order. The judge didn't call them, see how their day was going.
Judge was pissed.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll do that, right? Sometimes the judges will make that effort. The judge did not care, and our client ended up with a 3-year restraining order. No, she's super happy.
Yeah.
So we protected her, but in the same respect, that was a bad decision.
Well, yeah, if you're not taking that serious and showing up to dispute it, then you clearly don't care.
She's violated four more times since. She's a crazy family member. So it's just the piece of paper is not going to be the thing that stops, but she's going to end up in jail.
It's never going to be the thing that stops. No.